Alice, we can listen to it tonight. Mm. Says your eternal right, even before there was constitutions and all kinds of things, you had the right to defend yourself to life and limb. So Mr. Arthur came to defend himself. But what I was concerned about...
I thought it was Mr. Motley who came to defend himself.
You know, Mr. Arthur who speak first. Remember that they said the Prime Minister bit him down the road and he come out to defend my Prime Minister. Tell him to come and defend
So you are saying that the Prime Minister baited Mr. Arthur? That's what you
I
are saying?
I'm not saying that. I said this.
They said so. What do you say?
What do I say?
Yeah.
I ain't have nothing to say on it.
Okay. So you just like me then?
No. Not just like you, because when you listen back, you can see that you said something. But that's what I'm saying now, right?
Yeah.
It's a pity that the bleeding heart for Mr. Motley didn't give Mr. Motley the same advice he gave Mr. Arthur, that he shouldn't have said anything. I too was taken back when I hear that he collapsed, whether he was fainting or convulsing or something. And it worried me to see that someone would be put in that position. But you, Mr. Ellis,
talk to me now about me.
Did not show the fella that the man that you and I revered was also taken to task. Being vindication.
Look, all of this talk, at the end of the day, the question is, what is the truth? The whole truth. That's all we are interested in. All of this rhetoric that you're putting down here is meaningless if you're not going to make contact with the fact that as members of the public, we are all entitled to make up our minds on the basis of what is the truth.
Mr. Ellis, thank God for that. And I, too, know that Sir Bamford gone to his death as a wounded man. I would like his name cleared before I go to mine.
Okay.
I would like that, too. So, and that is truth, too.
All right, sir.
And I know that you would like it, too. I know that you would like it, too. So you could...
You know, the truth of the matter is that...
I know you would like that, too.
The truth of the matter is that I thought, I really did think, that with the passage of time, people understood the context in which things happened, and that Sir Bamford, he was knighted. I think, in my judgment, that whole issue was long dead and gone, largely because people make all sorts of accusations. But it is going the next step. They failed to do that. And by failing to do that, all that they were saying appeared to ring hollow. That is the difference. That is the difficulty associated with election campaigns. And that is why I am telling you that I am concerned as a Barbadian for people who set about trying to set all types of political traps with half-truths and lies, rather than and make people like me and you ramble about the place and come to certain conclusions, make decisions one way or the other on the basis of half-truths and lies. That's not what it's supposed to be. They can do that, but other institutions in this country have a responsibility to make sure that you get to the bottom of it and that truth prevails, so that people will not have to walk about this country hanging their heads in shame, and their children and their relatives hurting for lies and half-truths. It's as simple
Ellis,
as that. I'm leaving.
Mr. Ellis.
Yes.
Mr. Ellis.
Yes.
Listen to me. You think that a pardon could suffice for somebody being wrongfully accused
listen,
or in prison or something?
Let's accept that.
To tell me about the knighthood and it wasn't done on
look, I'm not here. Look, this is long dead and gone. I don't see a need for us to pursue this particular matter at this time. Okay?
Mr.
Let's move on. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks.
Don't run away.
I am running away. I don't think it's necessary. Sir Bamford is now deceased. I mean, why are we wasting time on this particular matter? There's so many other things that are relevant to the upcoming general election campaign. He's not a candidate, you know. He's not running for anything right now. The principle is what I defend, which is truth. Down to brass tacks. Hello? Welcome to the program. Hello.
Hello. Yes, David.
Yes.
It's unfortunate. You know, the last caller is so persistent and going down a road and something that has, I mean, we are in one of the most critical stages of the country right now. Barbados is really in need of how we're going to move forward. And he wants to engage in all kind of innuendos and going back to stuff and trying. I mean, how does that help us? He's always talking about polls and he wants to question Peter Wickham's polls, and polls are now dead and irrelevant and a whole heap of tripe. I mean, I really wish that VOB would really assess his contribution to the program and make some decisions and curtail, you know, what I consider to be valuable thing. This guy comes to this program to be a program that is of great value to Barbados and Barbadians, and hence it should be utilized in a manner that would, you know, help to take us forward. And it's really unfortunate. Anyhow, let me move on to a couple of points. I don't know whether you agree what I said or not.
You proceed with your points.
Look, I would like to... Can you tell me what's the difference between debt profiling and refinancing? Is there a difference, or are they 6.5, that's 6 or 1.5, that's the other?
Well, we talked about the debt profiling earlier. The question of restructuring, they say, is a process that allows a private or public company or a sovereign entity
facing cash flow and distress to
reduce and renegotiate its delinquent debt
to improve or restore
liquidity so that it can continue its operations.
Okay, in the interest of time, I heard that part. But how does that differ from refinancing? I'm not sure.
Replacement of old debt by new debt when not under financial distress. It's called refinancing. Out-of-court restructurings are also known as workouts. Okay. Also known as workouts are increasingly becoming a global reality as well. So it's these words are, yes, they are all interrelated.
Okay. All right. And if someone, if a person, I'll use a quick hypothetical case here. If one is on the pressure and they seek refinancing or the reprofiling of their debt, and while they're doing that, they're also looking at new avenues of earning and bringing in revenue. Does that not buy them time and opportunity to really move forward rather than being under the pressure?
It buys you time. But you know, you and I understand quite clearly that having bought time, you still have to do a lot of work now in trying to restructure.
It's what you do with that time.
Yes, and how you use the available resources at your disposal.
Now you're hitting them some key points. It's what you do with those resources that are available. So what if you use those resources to build out on new areas of economic development? What if you and as you make this new development, it earns you valuable foreign exchange. It allows you to restructure the substitution for foreign exchange. In other words, suppose you build those, and let's say you're financing areas of agriculture that would allow Barbados to save money in terms of the imports, and we not having to reduce the import bill. That is foreign.
But you have to, in the case of agriculture, you would have to be able to show what's the platform on which you are going to build that particular superstructure. Because,
okay,
you know, agriculture in Barbados right now, many people look at it. Maybe, because as I say, part of the problem that you have is that there has not been enough engagement with members of the public about some of the things that the government has done. And it may well be that that platform is quite firm and good, but you...
It's a firm platform. I am satisfied that it is. It's just a matter of how we have to change the perception of agriculture and how people view it, because if you look at the old approaches where, you know, basket and bowl,
and that hasn't been changed. I see people tomatoes are selling all over this country right now that have been produced via hydroponics.
Ah, So therefore, but that...
So that's changed. A lot of that is changing.
What you're referring to as having changed is the approach by farmers and people are, in fact,
precisely.
Making that change. But the question is whether that change has... Whether the perception by Barbadians and the wider public and those who are charged with responsibility of building out Barbados and taking forward, whether their thinking has, in fact, changed. And you, if you take... If they come on board and have the not only a consultation, but have plans to use these new skills and these new approaches and build out on it and provide greater production of food and eat more of what we grow and grow more of what we eat, it is achievable because a dollar saved is a dollar earned. Do you agree on that? If you're saving money that you no longer have to spend in foreign exchange, it benefits the country. And I'm saying that if some of that money that would become available is utilized in that manner. I'm just using agriculture as one example. I mean, it could be manufacturing. There are a number of other ways. But saying that takes a major amount of our foreign exchange. I believe it's fuel and food that are the two largest consumers of foreign exchange. Is that correct?
Yes.
Hello?
The food, okay. Food import,
okay,
bill is,
okay,
quite high.
Right. So close to a billion dollars. So I'm saying that that's an area that can be looked at very seriously and all, with organizations.
Yeah, but we have manifestos technology before us. So
yeah,
this thing about can be looked at very seriously is now, that's the talk that we were putting down for the last 5 years.
David,
we have manifestos before us now. Have you looked at both of them?
David, I'm not here representing any political party.
No, I didn't ask you to represent either political party. I'm asking you, as a concerned Barbadian, with the choices available to us, I would think it would be useful to look at these ideas.
Here's what I want to
do.
I'm putting stuff out there for thinking Barbadians to see, you know, that there's opportunity for Barbados to move forward, and there are areas where we could, if we got an opportunity to profile our debt and use it in a productive manner and a skillful manner, you can build out using that those resources.
All right, let's move on then. Thank you very much. There's a story, another major story, apart from the shooting in Texas. Every bishop in Chile has offered his resignation to Pope Francis after a 3-day emergency summit at the Vatican to discuss Chile's sex abuse scandal. Every bishop in Chile. And in total, 31 active bishops and 3 retired bishops announced in a statement that they have offered to resign over the scandal and place the issue in the hands of the Holy Father so that he might freely decide for each one of us. The simultaneous resignation of all the bishops in a single country is thought to be unprecedented in the modern history of the Catholic Church. This is Down to Brass Tacks. This is Down to Brass Tacks. It's now 11 minutes after 1 o'clock. Hello?
Hello.
You're on the air. Yes.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm well.
Hi. Earlier, you used the word prolonged and sustained recession, right?
Yes.
How long would you...
I think the recession, the word recession really ended around 2010.
All right, well, good. Okay, well, I have World Bank stats that tells me the recession started in 2008, and by 2010, 2011, it was already finished.
Yes.
Right? So we've been using the... And I also have stats, too, that tells me that our major trading partners, where we get our, derive our, the bulk of our tourists and other things from, recession also finishing in those countries, England, UK, or UK, Canada, and the States, they were all finished by 2011, right? So I don't consider it to sustain and prolong. That's my opinion, right? We've been using that scapegoat now for... How long? I can't say. But let's say it happened 2008, 2010, let's say 3 years out of the 10 years the administration has been in office. Could you really say that has been the cause of the situation that we're in?
Well, I can only go with what the administration has given as its cause.
But I heard a minister say on his platform that it went as far as 2015. But that is not true. That is not true at all. That's very misleading. Now, my other topic, my other...
Well, they may well want to argue, though, that the effects of the recession lasted longer than the actual recession. Isn't that different?
I guess you could use that argument too. No, this one is on a more personal note, right?
Mm.
I met a former prime minister in 1996.
Yeah, too many of them.
Well, you could decide which one I mean. I met him at a place called Landmark Nurseries in Derrick, St. James. And he was buying plants. He had no security detail, nothing. He was just there as a regular person. And he spoke to me and he spoke to a guy that worked for me. And that so much impressed me about him that I really admired him from that day on. How easily he interacted with me and other people around. And that impressed me a lot. But I also want to say, I have lost a whole lot of respect for that former prime minister. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. Thank you, David.
This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello? You're on the air.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes, welcome to the program.
Thank you kindly. Mr. Ellis, would you say that when you and I dialogue, that it is a respectful one, cordial one?
Yes, I would say so, without hesitation.
Right. And would you say, would agree that, or disagree, that during those times that you just got me by my throat?
No, I wouldn't say that. As a matter of fact, I would put it the other way around.
No, I'm asking because
I'm the victim here.
No, I'm not going to say that. I'm asking that because, and there's a gentleman who listens to the program a lot. He said at one time he didn't used to listen to it but he's listening to Trump and all that. And who has, but you know, I say when a man don't like you, bright paper will cut you. Now, let me move away from that.
He doesn't like you?
Well, you don't like when I, because of my stance, because of when he come on the program, and I defend.
Because he knows that you're going to defend the Democratic Labour Party.
Right, right. So his very kind of lowish, and
that is something that you have to live with. And
yeah, but you see, one thing that I have noticed over the years, and something that I'm concerned about as a Barbadian.
What's that?
That when you have to say anything that you don't agree with, as far as the Barbados Labour Party is concerned, their supporters, I find that they're very vicious and they can be very dirty.
Let me tell you
and
something.
And this is something that I...
Let me tell you something. Let me tell you something.
I don't appreciate it.
Let me tell you something.
I don't appreciate it.
That works both ways.
Okay, well, look, I'm saying to you that I don't think that it's the nice thing because we all have...
But that is the nature of politics. There are people who... Listen, I've been watching some comments that have been made, for instance, on Facebook, and I am just sometimes amazed at how people get all wrapped up in this political game to the point where every little thing that happens, they have to be out there cussing somebody. Sometimes they use cuss words. Definite
right.
cuss words, you know.
Right.
And
right.
They take this thing so personally.
Yeah,
that is absolutely amazing. But that is the nature. That's the nature of the beast.
Right. Only a short while ago, I was dialoguing with a gentleman here at my house, and the conversation was so completely different, respectful, and so on. I mean,
I have a mix of friends. Right. There are some of them that at the minute that you start a conversation on the politics and you share your view, they're at your throat. Then there are others who, just like them, share their view, an alternative view to yours, but you can sit down with them and talk it through. You can identify with how they see the situation. You may differ on the points, but at the end of it all, it is respectful. They got some other people disrespectful. They say all sorts of negative things. I could tell you that I used to be in a chat with some people and I pull out just because of that. Because they're at your throat. They can't be, you cannot have an alternative view. And even today, you will find that occasionally, even though you're not in the chat with them, they say some negative things. But that goes with the territory. And, right. You know, because when you say things about people, you find they get back to them anyhow, whether you like it or not.
Right now,
so that is the nature of the beast, and you got to appreciate that. Now, are you going to get into a situation of trying to respond to that guy because he's been saying these things there? You need to forget that, because
right. No
matter what you do in life, no matter how perfect you may be in your judgment, you are still going to get people who are going to criticize you.
Right. Now, let me move on to say here, Mr. Ellis, that you mentioned just now a situation in Chile where the bishops resigned.
Yeah.
Because of sexual abuse and things that have been taking place.
Scandal that has rocked Chile, yes.
Now, I, as a practicing Christian and a believer in Christ, want to wholeheartedly give my support to those bishops, because any kind of sexual abuse or immoral behavior should be at all times rejected by Christians in the Church of God, by everybody normally, but more so persons who believe in the principles of Jesus. It is wrong.
What do you see as immoral behavior that needs to be rejected, apart from sexual abuse?
When a man go and beat up a woman,
right. Because
then he may hear that she's talking to a man or something like that kind.
Right.
He won't cut your throat or stab her up or what those kinds of violent behavior are.
So you don't believe. So would you hold the view that all sin that is committed should be treated that way?
And yes, but here.
Do you make a distinction between little sin and big sin?
No, there's no difference. But now let me show you where the difference is. That
what
we have today, where there are those persons and countries who are trying to enforce their way of life on Barbados and other countries who want to, they would say to you, you have to amend your laws to let a man marry a man or a woman marry a woman. Now, these are people who do these things where they put what we call the human right above God's rights and principles.
Let me ask you this question. Barbados is a tourist country?
Yes.
You believe that men who are married to men come here? I'm asking you a question.
There's a distinct
Do you believe?
Difference.
No, okay. Do but you, hold on. Just answer me. Does Barbados turn away men who are married to men who come here as tourists, or women who are married to women?
That's not against the law.
It is not against the law.
Correct.
Hold on a minute. Do you believe that people who come here to work in the offshore financial sector from countries like Canada come here with spouses who are of the same sex?
I don't know if that happens.
I'm listening to you, but let me say something to you. You also have to look at the legal ramifications associated with trying to hold on to the status quo. In other words, if a man or two women or two men come here on holiday, one takes seriously ill and has to go to the Queen Elizabeth Hospital for an emergency operation, to whom are you going to turn to get the blessing to proceed, given the way that your law is currently structured?
But let me.
As simple as that seems, I've been aware, for instance, of a scenario that unfolded here similar to that years ago, where the parties involved spoke Spanish. And it was very difficult to track down that next of kin other than the person who would accompany them to Barbados. So those are the types of issues that you face when you look at this. So you cannot look at this issue only in the context of Barbadians who want to live their particular lifestyle. We are a country that is inviting so many other people here.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes, sir.
You are looking at two completely different textual matters.
Mm-hmm.
Let me point this out to you. There is no law in Barbados that say two men or two women who are married somewhere else can't come in Barbados and live. That is not the law.
But the existing law in Barbados, the question that you need to confront, sir, is how does the existing law, because you're talking about same-sex relationships, how does that existing law in Barbados impact on two people who are married elsewhere and come here to live?
This is not a joke. Let me say this to you. You are looking, I am pointing out to you, our laws in Barbados does not say or forbid a man and a woman from coming from somewhere else who are married to come to Barbados.
How do you know how the law impacts on them?
The law does not say, and if I'm wrong, you could tell me that I'm wrong.
I think you should be in a position. You know, having had me put this before you, I think you need to spend a little time asking more questions about
it. No, I am not asking no questions. I'm putting it to you.
Anyhow, what was the main point that you wanted to make?
Well, okay. That was not me.
Because I derailed you. Sorry. Right, so I got to give you time.
I want to say here to you that the Barbados Party say that they will go to the International Monetary Fund for support. But they have not told us or told you what impact that is going to have on the country as far as employment is concerned.
You mean their manifesto?
No, you heard Ms. Molly. I don't know if it's any manifesto.
Proceed.
Now, you remember, Mr. Ellis, in the 90s when the government went to the IMF, we had enough 8,000 or what it was persons, and the IMF also wanted us to discard or have health services paid for and education and so on. And Mr. Sandiford said, we asked the workers for 10%. They said no, then he went to Parliament and got it to 8. My question is, how come that the Barbados Labour Party has not mentioned, and you know very well that as long as you go to IMF for funding, especially now at this time, that there are going to be stringent policies or rules in place where we have a large public sector.
Okay.
And we've heard...
I'm gonna leave you, because I got to leave you now.
Okay.
But the Democratic Labour Party manifesto speaks about reintroducing the income tax deduction for credit union shares and deposits, removing the asset tax on cooperatives, providing for deposit insurance on deposits at cooperatives, supporting the establishment of a credit union-owned and operated commercial bank, reforming the various central bank guarantee schemes to include the credit union and cooperatives in facilitating small and medium-sized enterprise funding, seeking international partnerships for the establishment of a venture capital financing for SMEs through the credit union movement. There are several proposals in the Democratic Labour Party manifesto as well. This one has come out only last night. And therefore, you have both of them before you to ask the question, what are you putting on the table? And exactly how are you all going to fix the problem? Where is the money going to come from? Okay? That's it for today's edition of Down to Brass Tacks. I want to thank Daddy Biggs and Dennis Johnson, who was here earlier, as well as Ronnie Clark, who's finished the production end of the program for me. I'm David Ellis, wishing you a great afternoon.